Bill asked me to send him some topics when he said, "Look, I don't need a sales pitch. You know, I'm gonna put you up in the afternoon, but I don't need a sales pitch. I need an education topic." I said, "Yes, sir. I'll do that." So I sent him three, and this is the one he picked. He picked the topic of coaching underperforming employees, and I think especially for this group, that's probably a good topic from the standpoint that not only, even though my focus is normally sales, I work in that world most of the time, but at the same time, you have service employees, you have administrative employees, you might even have a manager that's not doing what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it, and so a way maybe to simply do some coaching with them might be helpful to try to bring them into compliance on some issues or some non underperformance or some non-performance issues, and so that's what we want to talk about a little bit. So let me just get you to kind of spread these around, and if you are a husband and wife team, if you're a couple, I hate to sound chintzy like this, but just take one of these, because I was also asked to bring enough for Lisa to send to the folks that aren't here. I've got a few more up here if this won't spread and get enough of you, but let me know. I don't want anybody to go without, but I don't want to waste any to make sure that we can cover everyone. When it comes to a topic like this, it's kind of like the sales guy that was out canvassing one day, and it was a nice day, and so he decided to get out and knock a few doors and do a little canvassing, and he walks up the sidewalk and here's a kid sitting on the stoop. Kind of reminded me of me back in the late 50s, early 60s, and the kid's sitting there with his head in his hands like some of us did, waiting for something to happen, something to do. And so the salesman walks up and he said, "Is your mom home?" And the kid says, "Yep." So he knocks on the door. Nothing. Nobody comes. He knocks again. Nothing. And so he looks down at the kid. He said, "I thought you said your mom was home." He said, "She is, but this ain't where I live." So sometimes we're like that when it comes to the coaching thing, is that we don't ask sometimes enough questions, or we don't ask the right questions to drill down and get to where we need to be. Now the danger of doing what we're getting ready to do here is that you give old Coy a handout, and what's he going to do? Well, he's going to start to reading that thing, you know. And so here you go. So if you will, just let we're going to walk through this together, and I promise I'll cover everything. So if you'll just, kind of let's go along with it together, and then you'll have it. Now, one of the things that I did for you is when I gave you your handout, there's two addendums or attachments at the end of it, and I put those on separate pieces of paper for you in case you wanted to make copies of those to use yourself if you choose that you want to do some coaching with this form, and that's fine. But if you'd rather even have an electronic copy, give me a heads up, and I'll email that to you, and then you can print out as many of those as you want. After we talk about it, if you think it's something that you want to fiddle with and get to work for you. So as you look at the beginning of this thing, and you see the first few paragraphs that I put on here, and obviously I'm not going to read this to you, but as we kind of talk through this thing, and just in way of introduction, it's important for management people to always realize the fact that your job really is not what you do; it's what you do through other people, and sometimes we grimace a little bit, but really because of that, our purpose as managers is to make sure that we just do everything possible so that our employees can produce and do what it is that we're requiring them to do to make sure that it reaches our big objective. And so that's the purpose there. So because of that, you really are getting paid for what your folks do more than what you're getting paid for what you do. And sometimes that's kind of a hard thing to do. We like to think that we're trailblazers and we can go get her done. But you really, if you think about it, you need your employees worse than they need you. And if you don't believe that, you can get mad at me if you want to, but if you don't believe that, if you've got salespeople and they all of a sudden disappeared, who's going to make all the sales? Have you got time or the effort or the skill sets to get out there and do all of that, or can you go service all those routes, or can you make all those clips? Probably not. So it's important to try to realize that. Now, in the industry that you're in the services industry, which is where I spend most of my time, it's it's not unusual at all to have some rookies. So you got new employees, and typically if we went around and had the time to take a survey, you could probably name me off in each location. You could name me off somebody, if not more than one somebody, who's underperforming, who's not doing what they need to do. So you got plenty of those kind of folks at all times. So it's kind of important that you have some kind of methodology for dealing with them, other than putting a boot up their butt or, hey, hit the bricks, you know, that sort of thing. And a lot of times, we, especially if that's our temperament, you know, when I was a branch manager back in the dark days at Orkin, I'm a high D type personality, and I was that kind of guy. And there was some folks that, you know, that in a heartbeat, I canned them, and then the next day when I sobered up, I was kind of sorry that I did that and wished I had them back. So maybe something like this will be helpful for you when you look at that. It kind of reminds me of a couple of situations. First off, you see here it says a lot of managers assume that they, when employees have problems, they assume that they know what the problem is and how it started and where it came from. Managers are that way, and again, you can walk out on me if you want to, but that's really how we are. It's kind of a, I've heard it put like it's an all-knowing, all-seeing disease that most managers have, that they just kind of feel, yeah, I know what Route 3's problem is. I got this thing. And we typically look at it and think about it that way. And most of you know some of the problems that you have when you assume. Most of you have seen that little diagram there. I won't go into that, but it reminds me of the fellow I heard about who was a reporter, and this guy was given a scoop by his boss, and his boss said, "Look, there's a big fire that's broken out, and it's over on the other ridge." He said, "We want to get a story on that for 6 o'clock, and we want to get some video." So he said, "What I want you to do is I want you to run down to the little airport, and I'm gonna have a while you're driving down there, I'm gonna call and set up for a little plane for you to jump on, and I want you to get up in the air, and I want you to get some video, and we want to get that on the evening news." So the guy said, "Yes, sir, three bags full." He jumps in the car, drives out to the airport, and as he pulls up, he sees a little Cessna sitting over there, and the props are running on that thing. And so he jumps out of his car, and he runs up, and he goes up the steps and pulls that thing up behind him and sits down and says, "Okay, let's go, go, go." And so they take off, and as soon as the wheels go up, then he says, "Look, bank left and get over here. Go over this next ridge over here. I need to make sure you come down low and close. I need to get some good pictures for the news tonight." And the guy turns around to him and said, "So you're not my flight instructor?" So sometimes assuming makes a mess, gets us in trouble. And then you got the other thing with managers where they just play the tough guy. "Well, we want to go in. Well, I'll just clean house. You know, I'll start off, been there and done that." I heard about a company that was having problems with productivity, and so finally they just ended up getting rid of the CEO, and they moved him out and put somebody else in his place. So you got this new CEO, and he's kind of a high D guy, and so he decides that he wants to sort of make a splash, and he goes over to one of their facilities and decides that that he's going to go and just leave a footprint and kick up a little dust. So he goes in the place, and he just kind of goes in there and parks himself and just starts looking around, and everybody had seen the memo and they'd seen the bio that was sent out. So as they kind of began to look around, they saw this guy, they knew who he was. And they, "Oh, this is the new boss. This is the new CEO." And the CEO looks over and he sees this one guy that's standing over here with his legs crossed, leaning up against the wall. And so he says, "Got me somebody I can make as an example for these folks." And so he walks over to the guy and he said, "Hey, you, how much money you make every week?" The guy said, "About $400. He says, "Okay." So he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out, starts counting them out, counts out $1,600 that he gives to the guy. Said, "Here's 4 weeks' pay. Consider that a severance. Hit the bricks. Don't come back." The guy said, "Okay." So he leaves. So he kind of struts around a little bit, and everybody's quiet, and they're looking at him. And so he says, "Can anybody tell me what that slacker does around this place?" "Sir, that was the Papa John's pizza delivery guy." So whether whether it's just assumptions or whether we just want to go in there and have a mean streak and try to kick up a little bit of dust, you know, that's not the answer. So if we're having problems with folks doing what they're supposed to be doing, then just like it says here, that people need to be, one, willing to change, and then secondly, they got to really go do it. But as you see, this ought to kind of ring a bell. The only people that want to be changed are wearing dirty diapers. And most of your folks probably don't fall in that category. So your folks may be resistant to change, especially if you do that in the traditional way. So because of that, I think it's kind of important that we have some kind of process to follow. And I also think it's important that you think that there's really two different things to consider. And one is, we can look at people's behaviors, or we can look at their attitudes. Most of the time, and I hear this, and I'm, you know, whenever I'm pointing one finger, I got four pointing back at me, so I get this, and I'm not in here trying to just stir up trouble with somebody else. But a lot of times we'll look at somebody and we'll say, man, that Route 3's got a bad attitude about collections, or, you know, that sales guy has really got a bad attitude about reinspections, or whatever the particular thing is. We always try to tie that to attitude. Well, that's kind of funny, because, you know, attitudes are invisible. You can't really see somebody's attitude. I mean, do you think that they do, you know, good work, or they do bad work as a result of an attitude? That's not what you see. What you see is the manifestation of the attitude's the behavior. And so you need to make sure that you're thinking about the right thing, because you can't manage attitudes. And a lot of times we do a lot of shadow boxing as managers or owners, a lot of shadow boxing with attitudes, when that's really not the answer. When you think about behaviors, just like your notes say right here, you can observe behaviors. You can measure behaviors. You can discuss them without emotion. You know, when you're talking to somebody about their attitude, you can't have that conversation without somebody getting up on edge. It's a very emotional topic when you start accusing somebody of having a bad attitude, or, you know, Mary, how you going? You got a bad attitude. Man, Mary goes nuts on you. So you got a real problem. But if it's a behavior thing, maybe we can approach it, you know, a little bit differently. So the one thing you want to remember when you're thinking about the difference between those two is to also realize that behavior that people perform is usually a result, well, almost always a result of whatever the consequences are. And there's only two kinds. There's positive consequences and there's negative consequences. Have you ever noticed that the more positive consequences that you put out after somebody exhibits some behavior, that behavior tends to repeat itself? You know, when I say or do something and somebody said, well, I really like that, Doug, when you did so-and-so. Well, I'll do it again, because maybe I'll get, you know, maybe he'll hit the hooray button one more time, and everybody laughs and yucks it up and say, man, we like that, Doug. I got something else. You know, that's what we want. By the same token, on the other side, you know, when you exhibit and follow up behavior with negative consequences, then that's a good way, by showing somebody some negative consequences, to decrease the frequency of that kind of behavior. Behavior and also the intensity of it. So it's a good way for us to sort of dial in the behavior that we want, is to think about pushing the consequence buttons. And a lot of times we don't do that. We just simply skip step one, two, and three and go, I'm gonna fire your butt if you do that one. You know, we typically do that. And that obviously is not where we want to go. So with that kind of as a backdrop, let's get into the actual process and look at probably you folks, I mean, been around, some of you longer than I have, and you've forgotten more than I'll know about some of this stuff, but I'm sure you've been exposed to, you know, several different type coaching deals when it comes to situations like this. But most of, if you're like me, most of them that I have seen and been around, they're just too much psychology in them. I'm not smart enough for some of them. And so some of them got, you know, there's too many steps and too much stuff, and it's just too busy. And so because of that, the process that I like the best, and I got introduced to this one probably 25 years ago, and that's the one, and Orkin used that at some point. I know when I was back in the training department back in the dark ages there and was doing some sales management training with BMTs, we used this guy's book as a way to introduce some of that in some sales management training. And that's this, must be a Frenchman, Ferdinand Fournier. Some of you might go Google him if you're interested in knowing any more than that. But that's the guy that started this process, this coaching process that we're going to take a look at and kind of quickly walk through. And so if you look at it, you'll see there there in your notes that that there are four steps to this thing. And it's real easy to look at that and think that you would do those four things in one sitting, but that's not how this works. These are four completely different events that would take place when somebody has a non-performance issue. So let me give you a scenario that I kind of want to use for the next few minutes, and let's just sort of, whether this is pertinent or not sure, hope it is, but let's sort of use this situation to kind of make application to some of these things as we go through it. Let's make an assumption. Here we are just beginning the off season at Orkin. In some places, more than others, the leads have already, except for bed bugs, have already pretty well dried up. And so with that in mind, let's say, for instance, that you're trying to stay ahead of the curve and you know that your sales folks are going to have a tough time getting appointments. They've got to be more creative. They've got to generate their own leads. And so you set up a tech lead program with all of your pest control service technicians. And you have a meeting on this and you say, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there now, and as we service our routes in October, November, January, and February, every time we go to one of those customers, we're going to go in there and we're going to have you do your regular pest control service, and then we're going to have you also give them a heads up, give them a pitch to try to provide an appointment for a free inspection for our sales guy to go in there as quick as he can get there and do a tops-down home inspection where he's going to check everything. It's not just a termite inspection. He's going to do a complete home inspection. And that's going to provide our sales guys someplace to go because they're scratching and clawing over there and they're running over there every 10 minutes and checking to see if the dial tone still works on the phone because no leads are coming in. And so we're going to do that, and we're going to provide you a little pad where that customer can sign it that says, yes, I want the free inspection, or no, I don't, but what I want from you is I want you to come back in. If you did 12 stops today, I want 12 of those little yellow stickies come back in, that whether they say yes or no is not material. What's material is that you offer that inspection to every one of your customers when you do that. Fair enough. And so he trains, you teach, and so you got that concept to go out there and do that. And that's going to, what that's going to do for you is that's going to provide you some additional income from some spiffs that we're going to pay you as a result of providing good leads that turn into sales for the salesperson. The salesperson's got more places to go, and that beefs up his income or her income, and then it helps the branch, gives us some revenue over the winter season that otherwise we wouldn't have, and that puts a smile on my face because I can keep the door open and won't have to lay off anybody. So what's not to like? And so that's the campaign that you got going. So with that being the case, let's assume that old Route 3, he just won't get on the bus. He just won't do it. And, in the old days, you probably would have just said, you wouldn't give him $1,600, but you would try to manage him out pretty quick. So the first thing that you do is you'll notice in the first step that's in there is something that's called neutral feedback. Now, this one's called neutral feedback one because you're going to do it twice. You don't want to just drop the hammer on somebody, so you're going to do it twice. Now, feedback is something that managers are terrible at. I'm talking about just regular ongoing feedback. You'll notice in your notes right here that 50% of the non-performance problems of employees everywhere, not just at Orkin, come from a lack of feedback. But again, if you give somebody positive feedback or something, it certainly don't cost you anything. It don't hurt you anything to mention the fact to somebody that, hey, you did a good job on that. Or, man, you're on pace. Or, hey, we need to tweak this thing a little bit. But what happens is we let it just fester. And we let it metastasize and we just let it grow. And we sit there when we're looking and talking to service managers and talking to ourselves and talking to ourselves. We sit around there and we say, well, heck. This guy is just not getting this done. If he goes one more day with doing that, I'm just going. And you're sitting there just getting yourself all worked up, getting your blood pressure up. He's just dumb, fat, and happy and thinks he's doing what he's supposed to be doing because he doesn't know. Unless you get feedback, you don't know what you don't know. And so it's very important to realize that there's really three kinds of feedback that you can give folks. We all know about positive feedback. Attaboy, Sparky, you're doing a great job. Keep doing what you're doing. Man, you are something else. That's wonderful. And then we all know what negative feedback looks like. You sorry sapsucker, if you do that one more time, that ... we know what that looks like. Well, this is neutral feedback. This is a little bit different, and you have to think a little bit before you do this because this is not the first thing that comes out of your mouth. But what you want to do is you want to ask a thought-provoking question so that old Route 3, stops and has to think about it a little bit. Because otherwise, if you just bark at him or give him some kind of a question that he can answer with a yes or no, we can say yes or no and not really think about what got said, and then just keep moving and go on about her business. So here's an example, because this, you know, this is the scenario that we're looking at. Here's an example of what that might sound like, because it's not positive and it's not negative, but you put it in the form of a question. So if you're talking to old Route 3 named Sparky, you see him right here. Look, Sparky, do you know? Now, you cut him out of the herd when you do this. You don't do this and embarrass him in front of the crew, but you pull him offline, and you and Sparky are there together. Sparky, do you know that you're the only technician during this off season who is not attempting to set home inspection appointments with your customers for the sales inspectors to complete? Now, there's a thought-provoking question that he can't just say yes, sir, or no, sir, or I gotta go. I mean, he's got to answer the question. So that's what we're talking about when we say, you know, neutral feedback, the first edition. So whatever your situation is, now I've just made up one, and that's the scenario I just made up, but you're probably sitting there thinking right now things that you want to talk to somebody about when you get back. Put it in the form of a question and open up that dialogue, open up that conversation. And what you want to do when you do that is just simply lay that out and then follow up. You know, when you're talking about these kind of issues, this is not something like you got to wait till the end of the quarter to see how he's going to do or how it's going to turn out. You don't have to wait till year end to see the improvement. The kind of things that you're coaching about are pretty knee-jerk in terms of we talk about it today and tomorrow we ought to start seeing something start to happen. So within a couple, 3 days, we ought to start seeing some points on the scoreboard and et cetera, et cetera. So in many cases, if we would start doing a better job of neutral feedback, we wouldn't get to the point sometimes where we get so far gone with this guy that we say, you, my office, now. It wouldn't have to happen. So there's one point right there in this part. This happens to be a step in the process, but this in and of itself many times will help resolve the problem. And this stuff doesn't go any past that. But not always the case. So if there's no improvement, if you don't see any steps being taken, you don't see any dust being kicked up by the guy when you do this, then you want to turn around and go to the second step. So this happens at a different time, you know, 2 days later, 6 days later, whatever it might be, after y'all talked about it once, then let's do one more neutral feedback before we really start to have to dig deeper, because we really would like to resolve this without, you know, having to go to court sort of thing. So if that's the case, then mention it again. This time, you basically want to do the same thing, but you just want to tweak it to the degree of making sure that you get that employee to tell you why their performance is unsat. You know, why are they not doing what they're doing when they're supposed to do what they're supposed to be able to do? And that's the question that you want to ask. And then also you want to ask for some specific behavior changes, whatever it is that you're dealing with. And use an example that I'm talking about up here. I may ask Sparky, gosh, Sparky, you know this is a campaign that we talked about in the service part. We laid this thing out. It seemed like a genius plan to me to help our folks have more appointments and more places to go. And yet, well, you know, you're not participating. I can't understand that. Tell me why. So you want to get something out of the guy. Again, you don't want to beat the guy up. You wanting him to turn on his own. It's just like your kids. I mean, you talk to your kids, most of you don't just go in there and wail on your kids. You probably have a little neutral feedback conversation there before you unstrap the belt. Or do they still do that? No, I guess you can't. I have to stop the recording. You can't whip kids anymore, can you? Shoot. Come to my house. I have my kids sign waivers for my grandkids when they spend the night, so that... Yeah. So the deal is that you want to do that twice, and then hopefully that fixes things. But sometimes it doesn't. So let's go on from there, and let's assume that after two neutral feedbacks with old Sparky on Route 3, that you're just not seeing the movement that needs to take place. He's not budging. So from there, then that's where you take a third step, but this time you do it alone. And it's just called a coaching analysis. And you'll notice that it's over on attachment A. Flip over to that attachment. And when you look at that, you probably think, holy smoke, look at this thing. It's a whole page. This is a daggum Q&A here. You're going to wear me out with this thing. No, not really. It might seem like it's kind of busy to you, but this is very systematic. And again, remember what you're trying to accomplish. You're sitting in your office by yourself now. Nobody's looking over your shoulder. And you're trying to just really, you know, just trying to figure out why is this behavior unsatisfactory. I need to find a reason, because Sparky didn't tell me when I said why. He still didn't say because so-and-so. I couldn't get anything out of him. So I've got to figure this thing out. So start at the top of the page. I'm not going to go through all of these, but I want you to kind of get the drift, because it doesn't take long to begin to sift through here. But again, we know what your discrepancy is, and if mine's not pertinent, you'll think about one that's happening in your shop right now with an admin person or with a service person or with a sales guy. The first thing you want to ask yourself, is this really worth my time and effort? How many times have we gotten hot and bothered and wrapped around the axle with something that really wasn't worth, you know, just getting all excited about? And maybe not all the time, but it happens sometimes where we get wrapped up, and it's an emotional kind of thing. And most of the time, it's when we're trying to deal with somebody's attitude about something. But with that being the case, ask yourself that question, and then you'll notice out to the right kind of what your answer is, depending on whether you answer yes or no. So this thing's real simple. You're gonna work your way down the page, and anytime you have to go over to the right hand side of the page, you need to deal with it. Then that may stop it right there. For instance. If we say, well, yeah, this is worth my time because this is something we need to do. We got to provide leads. Those sales guys need places to go, and this is going to help revenue for the branch. So shall it be done. And then you turn around and you say, well, look, does Sparky know that his behavior is unsatisfactory? Absolutely. We established that in neutral feedback one, and I reinforced it in neutral feedback two. So you know you've been there. So then the next thing you ask yourself is, well, does Sparky know what he's supposed to do? And you think about that for a second and say, yepper, I remember the training session. We went through this and this and this and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, again, look at your options over here. If he really doesn't know, then the answer is tell him. You know, don't fire him. Tell him. Don't beat him up. Tell him. So you just work your way down the page. You know, does he know how to do it? Well, I see. I mean, we went through the class. We even role played in there. And, yeah, the service manager kind of, you know, he gave him a thumbs up or yeah. But if not, train him and practice with him. So it's just real simple. You just kind of work your way down the page and see, you know, whatever that infraction is, whatever that non-performance issue is, work your way through that. Does he know how? Does he know why that they should do it? Well, maybe I didn't do a very good job. Well, if you didn't do a very good job of explaining how that's helping every job code in the branch, well, maybe you want to go back and do that again. But if you're satisfied, then keep moving. And again, yada, yada, you get on down to the, let me just jump on down to almost the bottom of the page. Are there, after all these other questions, well, are any personal problems interfering? Oh, and then all of a sudden, yeah, Sparky's wife just had a baby, and I know he's not been getting much sleep at night, and I know he's been grumpy. And if that's the case, if there's some kind of legitimate something or other, then, of course, the employee's got to pull her own little red wagon, so they've got to resolve that, but it gives you a talking point that you can get back in front of Sparky again and talk about that and say, well, it could be this. Let me try that. But if not, saying, no, I don't know of any personal problem there. And then here comes the real clincher. The last one on the list is, well, could Sparky do it if he chose to do it? So the point here is that, you know, and it's in your notes in bold print here somewhere. A coaching discussion, which is the last step, will not be effective if non-performance is occurring because of one or more of the reasons in the coaching analysis. So if you find something in there that's a training issue, a skills issue, anything else other than the fact of just he ain't doing it. He knows how, he knows when, he knows why, he knows all this other kind of stuff, but he's just decided, I ain't doing it. You know, that's when you have a come to manager meeting and you sit down and deal this thing. So it's only effective in redirecting behavior when all the other possibilities have been eliminated. So that's where we're going with this. So this to me is a real valuable tool. I mean, you can use this with your kids. There's a lot of instances when you can use something like this to go through that process and think before you actually sit down with somebody, eliminate every other possibility that might be out there that might be causing something like that. And so with that in mind, if you do that and if you get to the bottom and you say, you know, this guy, this gal could, you know, they absolutely could do it if they chose to do it. But for whatever reason, they are just not participating. They're not willing to play. It's not a skills related. It's not a training related thing. Then we're going to have to do the next step, which is step four, which will be the actual coaching discussion where we're going to have to get face to face, and we're going to have to talk about this, and we're going to have to determine some consequences for non-performance, and we're going to have to be tough about this. But at the same time, we're going to be professional. So as you do that, again, remembering that any time you sit down and you have a one-on-one with any employee or with your spouse, that emotions drift in pretty quickly, and you start to get a little red in the face, and that vein over here starts bulging, and you get mad, and the tech gets mad, and you talk a little louder, and he responds a little louder, and you escalate the controversy, and it goes on and on. So to do that, what you've got to do is you've got to make sure that you can stay on track. That's what attachment B is for. Attachment B is your little coaching discussion plan. And what that's for is for you to sit down, and before you have that meeting with Sparky, you sit down and make some notes that will keep you on message and keep you on track and keep you from losing your cool and jumping up and saying, you know, I can fire you because I own the place type thing. And so you don't get carried away. So, you know, for instance, I've just made some ad hoc notes in mind right here. So if I was getting ready to sit down with John and we were getting ready to talk serious about something, then I've got some notes here that will keep me on track, that will keep me from losing my temper, hopefully, and getting carried away. So that's what the discussion plan is, and you want to do that and prepare that prior to getting together. And then once you've got that together, the next things that you see in your handout there are some just little reminders about, well, how do you position yourself for this discussion? Obviously, this is something that you want to do in private. Obviously, it's something you want to do one-on-one. You don't want any interruptions. You don't want to do it in his vehicle. You don't want to do it in a restaurant where somebody might overhear. So you figure it out, whether it's someplace in the office. If I was back in operations of some sort again, I probably wouldn't do it in my office because that's intimidating. It's my home court. It's probably a little intimidating when Route 3 is sitting there and looking at me. And, you know, like some managers, they got their chairs are a little bit taller than Sparky's chair. And so Sparky's sitting there looking up at the managers anyhow because he sawed the legs off of... You don't believe that, do you? I had a manager one time that did that. The chair of the participant was much shorter than his. I think his had concrete blocks under it, and Sparky's were sawed off. So the poor guy's sitting there looking up at the king. So you don't want to do that. Again, you see some other notes there of what you want to do. But the other thing is before you get in there, you've got to have already decided what's the minimum I'll accept. When we finish this thing up, what's the least he can do that will be acceptable as a starting place here? You kind of need to know what those parameters are. By the same token, you need to make sure that you have some clear consequences, and they need to be sequential. You know, they start off not so, you know, if you don't do this, we do this, and then it gets down to, well, maybe 3 days off with pay, and then all the way, you know, finally, and maybe end up, you know, with termination if you just can't play ball like the rest of the team. So whatever that is, you need to have some clear consequences laid out there. And then finally, as you look at the last few points that are there as we wrap up, you want to make sure in this discussion, as you first get started with this thing, that it's fruitless for you to try to go through this discussion if in the unlikely event your employee just will not admit to the situation. You know, sometimes that's the case where the employee just will not agree that what you're talking about's a problem. Well, I just don't see it. Boss, that just don't seem like that's a big deal. I just don't see it like you see it. Whatever it might be, however he or she might position it, or put it to you, until you can reach that point that they agree that it's a problem. Yeah, you did tell me this, and yeah, I remember that, and yeah, I understand. You're right; it's a problem. And, you know, if you don't get them there, don't try to go past that because the rest of it won't matter. You're not going to get where you need to be. So you got to realize that there's a problem that exists. And the next thing you want to do in process of talking to them is you want to make sure that Fournier calls it thought transmission. You know, it's unsanitary to put words in people's mouth. You know, you already knew that. But you want to put words in people's brain so it'll come out of their mouth. You need to make the employee say whatever it is that he agrees to. And that's why you don't want to say, okay, do you understand? it's real easy for him to say, yeah, or no, without any kind of commitment. Let's just get past this. I'm just going to answer, and then we're just going to move on. His heart's not in it, though. And so you want to make sure that you position things in ways that, you know, when we get to an agreement about something, say, okay, well, then tell me, Sparky, tell me what the plan is. What is it now when we finish our meeting here? What is it that you're going to do? And you lead him, again, with open questions. Don't forget my favorite guy, Rudyard Kipling, the poet. Anybody remember him from 10th grade literature? I kept six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names were what, why, when, where, how, and who. I sent them over land and sea. I sent them east and west. And after they worked for me, I give them all a rest. He didn't have anything to do with sales. That was in 1902 that he wrote that in the Jungle Book of all things. But that's a perfect description of what salespeople, management people, owners should be able to do, is using questions to make things happen. You'll question yourself into a whole lot more sales than you'll ever talk yourself into. You already know that. But when you leave the meeting, you know, it doesn't happen. You fall off the wagon and you go out there and start telling again. So that's exactly what you want to do, is you want, well, okay, tell me what it is you're going to do. Well, I'm going to talk to every one of my customers on every stop that I make, and we're going to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and get the words to come out of his mouth. And so now, Sparky, what's going to happen if you don't do that? We don't see some movement by next week. Blah, 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 and he answers your question. So again, the thought transmission, plant it up here in his brain so that you can get the words to come out of his mouth. We call that getting hung by the tongue. And that's exactly what you want to happen. You want that commitment to be made because you want to salvage the guy. You're not trying to get rid of the guy. You're trying to get him in compliance, get him back on the bus, get him moving along with everybody else to accomplish what we want to try to accomplish around here. So after that comes reinforcement. Managers are terrible at follow-up and reinforcement. What happens is we have one of those meetings. The employee agrees, yes, sir, three bags full. I'm going to do better. I'm going to do this. And the manager walks away and says, okay, we got that handled. And the manager goes on because he's got other fish to fry, and he goes someplace else to do something else. And he assumes that the employee follows up and does what they're going to do. You can't do that. So when you leave that coaching discussion meeting, make sure you set a follow-up meeting. Okay, Sparky, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get back together at so-and-so time on 6 days from now, 5 days, 1 week from now, whatever it is, same time next week. And we will get back together and let's kind of talk. Let's see where we are on this. So set a follow-up appointment. Follow-up is something managers just don't do well at. So make yourself do that follow-up. You'll be glad you do, because it will help to make some significant changes. So I believe, as you see in the last paragraph down there, that by doing that, when you do that, your blood pressure goes down a little bit. You got one less thing to worry about. I believe you'll have less turnover of folks that are, you know, either you run them off or they get so unhappy that they end up leaving. And primarily the reason is because you're dealing with something concrete, which is behaviors, as opposed to something that's invisible like attitudes. It's just so hard for me to hit the dartboard if they blindfold me. It's just very difficult to do. You've all done pin the tail on the donkey. So I'll just conclude with this. A neighbor walks over and he asks his next door neighbor if he can borrow his axe that he needs to chop up some firewood. And his neighbor said, no, you can't borrow my axe because I got to make some homemade soup. So the first neighbor says, I don't understand what borrowing your axe has to do with homemade soup. He said, well, it ain't got nothing to do with it, but if I don't want to loan you my axe, one excuse is good as another. So just remember that when you're dealing with folks, that whether it's you as the manager, sometimes we get duped into one excuse as good as another, or it's that employee themselves. I think this process, if you go play with this, and you may massage it, want to do something a little bit different, but I think this will give you a great way to do some coaching with you folks and make a difference. What say you? Okay, clap again. Thank you.